It's February 7th, 2017, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you from the very wet Santa Cruz Mountains, wet and muddy today in Northern California, and we're broadcasting from Lupin Lodge.
Where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
Oh, makes me just want to start taking my clothes off, doesn't it, you, partner, out there? Oh, I love it when you say that. I don't know who you are, but you're good at that. I'm Errol Strider.
Now I'll tell you, I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider.
Okay, that works.
And we, Errol and I, welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition with all its eccentricities, and we see that wherever we go. And what to make of it, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and the many voices of Errol Strider.
Our show is sponsored by our good friend Jeremy Bede from Wiley, Texas, although I first met Jeremy in Aspen, Colorado, and he was at the back of the bookstore looking at, as it turns out, the Urantia book. He was a young man from Kansas. I didn't know him. I walked up to him, and since I had been reading the Urantia book that summer, I had just come upon it, I engaged him in conversation about it, and we were both very taken with it. And that's how we met. And so thank you, Jeremy Bede, for being our sponsor all these years later, because I found the Urantia book in 1969. One of the many and profound great books that have come my way. Thank God.
And if you're listening, Jeremy Bede, we know it was your birthday a few days ago, and we want to wish you on air a very wonderful new year.
And a happy birthday.
Well, yeah.
My man. And our other sponsor is Go Raw. Go Raw makes natural, nutritious, delicious food for health and oral satisfaction. Okay.
Okay, it's going to be one of those shows, yeah, so to speak.
All right. I want to jump into it. In view of now having the opportunity to use alternate facts, we have selected So to Speak as our featured phrase of the week. For those of you who don't know, every week we pick a phrase that we think we could build our conversation around. We usually find that we can, and it's very interesting to see how that evolves. So to speak, is the little thing that we're going to be watching for tonight. Okay, as many of us can see, our society is in quite a pickle, so to speak. See, there it is. Some would say this is the most dangerous time in human history, one that requires us to think more deeply and comprehensively about the human condition, so to speak, while we discover and cultivate appropriate responses and actions we can take to handle it.
So to speak.
Exactly. So in an effort to galvanize our energy and focus our attention, in tonight's conversation, Rochelle and I will delve into what I see as the interface between the inner life and the outer circumstances, to see how these two dimensions of being come together in ways that empower us to deal with the extreme challenges we face on the outside, so to speak.
So to speak.
So there you have it. We are Errol and Rochelle.
I was inspired to write these words. After I wrote them and read them, I thought, well, yes, they are as appropriate as anything else, so to speak. So to speak, I speak so. It's what I mean. Get it? Let's know that what we say with conviction. Why say it otherwise? I mean, to test the waters for response? I need not, if perception be, so to speak, then I'll step forth with words and bear the brunt of the consequences.
So to speak. It's funny, one of the definitions that came up for example, I'm a writer, so to speak.
But that's not true. When I looked it up, so to speak, meant it means so.
This is a way of saying it's used to suggest that some people may not think this is a good way to say something.
But you believe it.
I believe it when I'm so speaking. But if I don't, you could so or thusly, it really becomes a moot point.
I have been blessed with people in my life, and I say blessed, and I'll tell you why in a second, who don't speak their truth, who try to finagle and get you to believe a lie because they're trying to protect themselves and their image of themselves and what have you. It's been very interesting to be able to recognize that it's not the truth, so to speak, and still love the people who speak it.
That's the challenge, isn't it? You think of someone like Gandhi, who's someone who in our lifetime demonstrated that kind of clarity about distinction. He didn't not love his quote-unquote enemy, but he sure went up against them, so to speak, civilly disobeyed them, otherwise known as civil disobedience, so to speak.
When you're a parent and you have a child that does something bad, the challenge is to not allow the child to feel unloved, at the same time being willing to realize that the child needs to know that what it did could hurt somebody, including himself, herself, or something else. That's very important, to not keep the love from being there when you're admonishing somebody to get them to realize that they're in a dangerous situation.
That's setting good boundaries. I want to reference something that I'm very impressed and impacted by. I've mentioned it before, and this is a response to the question of how we can interact with this developing story that's going on in the world with all the crises and the possibilities for dangerous and painful things to happen to many people. It's from the book Serving Humanity by Alice Bailey. And she has this group of people that she calls the NGWS, the New Group of World Servers. She's written in her Serving Humanity, I'm holding here about 20, 30 pages from it, which kind of sums it up, which I'd be happy to send anyone who would like to see it or refer you to the book Serving Humanity. She talks about people of goodwill, that's who we need to galvanize. Right now, we seem to live in a world where bad will is dominant. I would suggest that goodwill is more powerful. Bad will is just more dramatic and sudden.
How do you define bad will?
I define bad will as will that essentially is exclusive. It's just for some narrow part of life and the rest of it be damned. Okay, whatever that is, you, your family, your gang, your country, whatever. But the rest of them be damned.
It could be the will of the ego.
The ego's will. We have, did you bring him along, Professor? Oh yeah, we've been studying the ego in the laboratories, and it wasn't hard to find egos. We just basically said, this is all about you, come on in. And these egos just lined up, practically broke the door down when they heard that the experiment was going to start with, it's all about you. They loved it, the egos. We wanted to test them, see how they would respond if we told them there was something that wasn't all about them.
Oh, boy.
This was what the experiment...
How fast did they leave?
It became very interesting. They immediately got very uncomfortable, but they each displayed it in a different way. Some of them curled up into fetuses. Some of them went screaming out the window. Unfortunately, it was a 12-story drop. Some of them started pounding on each other. And many started exclaiming and yelling and screaming, it's not so, it's not so. That's an alternate fact. They said, no, it's all about me. Now you've got this president, Mr. Trump. He is a very good example of an ego. So it's good if you want to study ego, You have a perfect player in Herr Trump.
You know, what's interesting is when people are coming from their ego, they have no idea that they're coming from their ego because they are so identified with the ego that it's just them. They don't make the separation. This is my ego and this is me over here, you know, waiting in the wings for one day. Maybe my ego will die and the real self will emerge. I don't think that thought is in their heads, so to speak.
That's the thing. We're not aware of it. By and large, we just go blithely through our life. I like doing blithely, by the way. I think blithely gets not as good press as it
should. That's because you studied dance.
Because I'm a
blithely
dancer.
Works with dance beautifully.
It does. But some people just go blithely through life thinking that they're dancing, but they're actually stumbling along.
So to speak.
But while we're considering these options, I want to play you a piece of music. Speaking of what could speak, this is a perspective that is really valuable. That's what art can do. And this is a song called If These Walls Could Speak, sung by Nancy Griffiths. These Old Walls Could Speak, Nancy Griffiths. What it brings to mind for me is the context in which we find ourselves. Think of walls. Walls create a context, a confined area, a space that you relate to, physically at least, that you work with, within. Do as well as you can within it. It can be the walls of a house or whatever. It could be the walls of a casket, I guess. just don't have as many options. Surrounded by.
Where did you go?
I don't know. That was very dark.
We lost you.
Okay,
my
let
God.
Me come back. Well, I'm not sure I can come back. Professor, can you help me out here?
Oh, God.
Of course, dear Errol. Hello, Rochelle. It's always so good to be here.
Oh, Professor Umbridge, yes, it's always good to
the
see you.
The context, of course, the context, the frame of reference in which you interpret your lives. Based upon this context, which you feel is that you live within, like the context could be your family, the context could be your room, the earth. Your party and the people that agree with you, or your context could be beyond that, include people who don't agree with you. You can have your context be as large as you want, and the larger your context is, the more options you'll have, and the more options you have, the more free you will feel, and the more free you will feel, the more alive, and if you're more alive, you will make just wonderful contributions that others can benefit from to help them feel more alive. So to speak.
Mm-hmm. I like having more options. But I was thinking a lot about the ego because we started talking about it. And I became very aware that when I'm thinking about myself and constantly looking at myself, like, oh, I'm good, bad, you know, am I okay? What do I look like? How do I feel? What are other things about me? Et cetera, et cetera. Then I'm in my ego. And when I'm thinking about the other, when I'm seeing the other as delightful, as my teacher, as, I don't know, just seeing the other, whatever it gives me, receiving the other, that's the best word, receiving the other without judgment, then I'm not. Of course, I can't know either of those things, but one makes me feel more peaceful and the other makes me feel more agitated. When I'm coming from my ego, there's always a degree of agitation because it's something I have to hold on to, whatever I put out, I have to hold on to it, I have to be right, I have to be wrong. But the other, it's just very peaceful.
If you think about what Thomas Merton says about the ego, do you remember Father O'Malley? Oh, sure, Thomas Merton, one of our great teachers in our own last century, Thomas Merton. He says there that the ego is a spasm,
so to speak.
And why is it a spasm? Because it's trying to go two opposite directions at the same time. You'd be in a spasm too. So what direction is it trying to go? Well, on one hand, it wants to go for more life, more and more life. But in fact, it's run into more and more death. And that creates a very spasmic phenomenon, which is what we call the ego. It wants to be more of itself. But it's hidden in the direction that it thinks it can be more of itself if it gets all more by itself and separates itself from everything else.
So to speak. I understand that.
But life is not moving in that direction, and so it's naturally going to create a spasm because we are not our egos. There's a deeper part of us that is reaching for more life, more love, more connection, more creativity, more abundance. That part is fairly strong. So for the ego to have to come up against that part, he's got to have a really good spasm, so to speak.
Sounds awful, so to speak.
It may sound awful, darling, but many people live that way, and that's what you're up against in this world, is this spasm of the ego, which is kind of like petrified wood. It's hardened resistance and fear of surrendering to the essence of life, the dear, blessed love itself, so to speak.
I was thinking about the Dalai Lama for some reason. The Dalai Lama sits in quiet and yet is so funny and aware, but he sits in quiet. I feel that when I see him, when I hear him talk. He sits in quiet, which means his mind is not racing to find something to say. He's just there. And it comes through. It comes out of him. I would say that that is wonderful, so to speak.
To be able to not only sit in quiet, but to laugh so noisily.
Yeah, joyful.
That's one of the things we appreciate about him. But here's something that is important to remember. Been listening to a lot of people talking about how they see what we're going through and et cetera, et cetera. But as we all know, actions speak louder than words, so to speak. So let's consider that. That was Chocolate Milk. Action speaks louder than words.
Somebody wrote me something a few days ago about love. They had heard the words in their mind that spoke of love and understood it. And I wrote them back and I said, first we hear about love, then we have to act with love. And then, if we're lucky, we become love. You have to act when you hear the truth. You have to act on the truth. You really do. I know it's true.
So to speak. Here's my so version of acting on the truth. People are looking for action they can take. One action that everyone can take right now is to become more congruent, to maximize their abilities and their powers so that they're prepared to deal with and take on greater and more complex problems that are yet to come and most likely inevitable. This is the question I would want to pose to someone. If difficult things are happening to you or are going to be coming that look likely to happen, not that you want them to, but to be maximally at your best, the Arantxa book uses the term, unify the powers of the soul by the dominance of love. Unify the powers of the soul. And what are the powers of the soul? Your consciousness, your ability to think, your will, your intuitive connectedness with life, life itself, your very beingness. This is the power, especially your will and your awareness. So that's two good places to start. Start expanding your awareness. Choose to be more aware of what's going on rather than to jump to some conclusion about it. Because it's likely that whatever conclusion you may jump to is at best inadequate, so to speak.
Or just a reaction. When you said congruent, let's say the guys that we realize we don't want to live like that, they're congruent too. In fact, the most effective ones are the most congruent. And then you, of course, spoke about the higher self, congruent around love. I don't think that's very understandable in most people.
No, it isn't. But this is a question I just raised to a couple integral teachers, Jeff Salzman and Ken Wilber, both very bright guys. They were describing that there's these evolutionary states that we go through, which is part of integral philosophy and theory. And each of them has their own frame of reference and value system and lifestyle and orientation. And they really can't comprehend the others, by and large.
Exactly.
Or they make themselves separate from the others. Maybe they can comprehend it. And they're evolutionary. You progress through these stages, progressively more and more liberating in many ways. My question was, though, is can we make a jump over to the place of consciousness we really need to get to quick? Because we don't really have time to wait for people to evolve through these developmental stages.
I totally disagree.
Oh, I love it when you say that. Oh, it gets me so excited.
Maybe we don't have time. Evolution has all the time in the world. That's just it. I mean, that's what evolution is. You have no idea that if the destruction of a great many beings leads to the absolute next stage of evolution, you have no idea. None whatsoever. So evolution has all the time in the world. That's what makes it so powerful.
But evolution doesn't wear a watch,
so to speak. That's exactly right. And every crisis or every challenge that is faced within a species exacerbates evolution.
It certainly challenges it.
Those who can evolve survive, and those who can't don't.
That's right. We're sorry, but you're in the cannot group. Go to your left.
So positions, as strong as they may be, can also imprison you.
Hi, this is Bonnie. And these positions, boy, you talk about positions. We got guys in the neighborhood. They got positions like barnacles attached to their attitude. Position attitude barnacles all over them. When they come up against you, they're very abrasive. And their attitude is like, who the hell do you think you are in relationship to me? What's your business? Well, the only way some people know how to deal with that is to assume the same thing but opposite. Well, who do you think you are? And I think I won the majority of the people wanted me in. That's the reality here. And if you see something else, oh, you who live in a different consciousness system than me, then clearly you're wrong, and you and all the people that report on you and me, they're all wrong, and they're idiots, and they're evil, I would even say, the press, if I were that kind of guy, so to speak.
Or, you know, if you're the kind of guy that looks at those things and thinks that they're bad and everything, too, you know.
Like, well, that's a different kind of guy, and I know guys like that, too, you know, not as many. But once in a while, I meet a guy who really shows up. He's right there in the moment, and he's like, you look at him, you look at each other, and you both go, I know you. And those moments are rare and far between. But if we could get people together in a group, Errol, you talked about having this training. I think a good idea to have in a training is you get these people together in a group and you make it safe and easy enough for them to drop the shells of these egos, to become authentic with themselves and others and feel the good vibe that's going to come from that. They're going to want that. Once they feel it, they're not going to be satisfied with anything less. That would be a good thing to have, don't you think? You know, that is a great idea. In other words, have them come together. Okay, like I'm thinking maybe like 50 to 100 people. Yeah, that's a good number, 50 to 100 people. And what's going to happen when they come together? Hey, Mr. Smarty Pants, you're funny, Barney. You're funny. You know what we could use? Theater. Have them imagine that they're in a play. And they're going to play this part, which
is... Oh, Mickey, can I be Judy?
And then we'll get these curtains. You know, there were some curtains out there in the barn just lying around. We can use them for costumes, Judy. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, it was those Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland...
Of the 40s.
When they were on the farm and they get this idea to have a theater and they're going to have show business, they're going to have singing and dancing...
And the MGM lot.
Right.
We were brought up with this wonderful fairy tales of joy and delight and music and dancing, and it was fun, you know, and I think the world is devoid of that now. We get so dark sometimes that we don't see the light.
If I may say one more thing, the world is devoid of that because they're avoiding and devoiding of that thing because they're avoiding looking at the thing that could get them exactly what they thought they really wanted instead of what they think that they want. Yes, they're avoiding, so to speak. I would say that. That's why we're going to mark void when they come in with the check of the non-cash that they think they don't have. We're going to put void on that check and then give it back to them and let them see if they can figure that out, so to speak. Thank you, Barney.
I don't think I understood anything you said, but that's okay.
That's useful.
It's fun.
It's one of those things that will maybe come to me later when I'm sleeping.
Or not.
Well, there's an option.
I was just thinking about Judy, the musicals of the 40s. You know, we were in the midst of a war. There were people shooting and killing each other with great abandonment. So many of them, millions of young men who, many who never lived long enough to see the end of it.
Yeah.
It was so dark, like fantasies. Hollywood did an amazing thing to assuage our terror. They gave us light and laughter. They really did. They made it fun. They made us live for a few minutes in the lightness of being rather than the darkness of being. Mm-hmm. It worked. It took us into the 50s where we were really deluded thinking that those images were real.
That was our peak of America. It was right after the war. We were in the best possible position. Think about it. We were this mighty, powerful, manufacturing, amazing country when we were focused, and half of the rest of the world was demolished.
That's right.
Let alone even having economies or anything. As I was listening to Noam Chomsky, it's been downhill from there. That was the peak.
Because it wasn't real. Because women were powerful during the war because they took men's positions, which they needed to fill. And then after the war, they went back to having no position. They were the second-class citizen all of a sudden. I'm going to go out on a limb, so to speak.
Uh-oh.
The way society treats their women, or the way women are in society, has a lot to do with maturity. The more mature societies, women have an equal role, if not greater role, than men. Because they have to understand that the women who bear the children, have a totally different understanding of life than men do. We do. We can't explain it. It just is. We haven't yet exalted that reality. And when we do, the world will change.
So to speak.
Went out on a limb.
That was good. Well, you speak clear, and that's clearly something that we need to do. And thank you for speaking clear.
Say what you will, it's not the words but the silence that kills. And it moves like a rat throughout the house, avoiding traps. And the whisper is nothing better. It takes more breath and is hardly heard. So speak clear and outright, or else I'm leaving you all tonight. Call me those names, point the finger, cast the blame. I'm wrong to you, but you just see the things that I don't do. So accept it, don't neglect it. It takes more breath, but is better heard. So speak clear and outright, or else I'm leaving you all tonight. Do you still believe in me? What do you not the silence that kills, and it moves like a rat throughout the house, avoiding traps and a whisper is nothing better. Oh, it takes more breath and is hardly heard, so speak clear and outright.
Speak clear, or else I'm leaving you all tonight.
Speak clear and outright.
I like that.
Well, you picked it.
So speak. And speaking, we are Inside Out, The Naked Truth. If you've just tuned in, this is a program that is a radical approach to the radical ideas that we've been radicalized on. Triple radicalization.
In his mind.
So to speak.
I watched you in the last few months immerse yourself in the machinations of society, especially the society in which we belong, that have been there all the time, but buried underneath illusions and whatever. They're coming to the surface. All of a sudden, there's lots of bugs out there. Go, ooh! But that kind of ego-induced power-mongering has been around forever, ever since man, you know, realized that if he hit somebody over the head, he was more powerful than them.
Can we give thanks to what Donald Trump is already providing? He is making choices that are so outrageous that people are coming together in a way that people have not come together since Vietnam, and that's precisely what is needed. And if I could say this, we need to build the movement around them. All these guys, especially Christopher Hedges, who's to me one of the smartest and most incisive thinkers, correspondent, he knows wherever he speaks. He's been in those war zones all over the world for 20 years. And the bottom line is we need a movement. What is that movement? And that's where I believe that Serving Humanity book begins to articulate how we go about building that movement. Because it's hard to sustain protesting. You can't go every week and protest. It's a good start, but then you have to build on that energy and you have to cultivate relationships. Now, within that community that has allowed you to recognize one another, now do the real work, tough work, but the necessary work, beginning to build quality relationships among yourselves. Learn how to synergize. Learn how to move the energy back and forth. Become co-creative relationships. And as you and your movement do that, it will inevitably, because of the power that comes out of that release of separation and tension, that is the way we keep ourselves apart from one another.
So to speak.
Hmm.
All I know is that you and I have been together 42 years. I know that we still get our buttons pushed. We still react to each other. What you're speaking about, this is what we have to do. Yeah, we do have to do it. It's absolutely imperative. But it is very difficult. It is not easy. And we're pretty aware people. And we still get caught in the traps of our ego.
But you know what has gotten easier over these years? We don't stay in it as long. I don't think it's a question of not having your ego pushed and not having an emotional reaction. I rather suspect that that'll happen till whichever one of us dies first.
We do get over it. And I told that to one of my students once. I said, it's not about being a certain way. It's realizing that when you fall into the pothole or the trap or your ego, you get out of it faster. That's progress. You just don't stay in it as long. You become aware that you're in it and you get out of it.
I watch myself start to pivot over into that. It's like someone who's about to fall off a track. I know what it looks like and feels like. For example, I go into comparison. I compare myself with someone else. I'm better, they're better, they're worse, they should have been better if they had only been as smart as me, but they were not as smart, and on the level of smart and stupid, they were hanging out in the stupid range.
And if I'm so smart, why don't I?
If or I'm whatever. A smart guy, why are they making money and I'm not? So speak. Or whatever.
Somebody told me comparison is of the ego. That's so true. It's a wonderful way to know when you're in it. Well, you're comparing yourself to other people.
What would be the first step? Let's say we meet somebody and they're in a position of what's outside is them. Two people. One's a Republican and they're very into that worldview, and the other's a Democratic senator, and you meet him in a bar. You and the Democratic senator and the Republican walk up to the bar, and what's the punchline?
How do you get to the other side of the street?
Right. See, you knew.
Oh, I didn't even know I knew.
You knew. How do you get to the other side of the street first?
We live in a wonderful community in the sense that it's a microcosm of a city. Everybody's here. The same proportions of any city, the demographics, this percentage is this, that percentage is that. Every day we get to enact or act out of who we really are in that city. Sometimes I'm overwhelmed by the traffic, the noise, the need to get, which is very prevalent in a big city. Feel it in a different way. And there's also those who are there to give and to behold. It's not the majority, but it exists. And because it exists, I have hope.
So to speak. I wanted to speak to you, majority out there, for just a second. And the minority, you can listen in if you want, but I'm really talking to the majority about
that. Majority is not listening.
That's insulting. If I were you and you're a majority, because I guarantee you in some area of your life, you're a majority. For example, of all the people who have and use cars, you're in that majority, most likely. You are in some kind of majority.
Okay, right? Yeah, and we all do.
So we are talking to you out there. And if you're in the majority, really your only job, and this is what the whole Constitution was about, right, Senator? Well, that's right. The purpose of the Constitution and the way it was set up so that the majority didn't dominate. Of course, when you have the majority being unconscious, which is why we're not an actual democracy, because if you trust all those unconscious people to make decisions, what I suggest here is every leader in society, at a certain point, if they're going to take on more responsibility, needs to go to a citizen leadership training program where they learn how to expand themselves so that they're big enough to be fair and effective for the community, the people they represent, the constituents. I myself, I had constituents. I love my constituents. And myself and my constituents, we'd get together and party, and we'd call it our constituent party. That's what I'm thinking I'm starting now, is the constituent party to replace the other parties that are now there, because neither of them is going to change. But if we create the constituent party, that means all the constituents of those members of society that are into the good, the beautiful, and the true, so to speak.
Can speak it so.
Speaking of so to speak, this is a beautiful, provocative, and profound song. But before I do this song, I thought of something that you brought up just a minute ago, and that is the question of which came first, the chicken or the egg? The answer is whoever gets there first. Oh, boy. You heard it here, folks.
So to speak, I don't get that one, but okay, go for it, Sting.
Seriously said it's prolonging me life if I'll only submit to this surgical knife. But what are the odds on a month or a week when the betting shop's closing its doors, so to speak? When you're tied to a pump and a breathing machine with our x-rays and probes and our monitor screens, and they'll wake you up hungry saying, how do you feel? and then your stuff full of pills, and I bury a meal. Prolonging me life, now that's some kind of joke. I'd be laughing me head off, and I'd probably choke. The spirit's still willing, but the rest of me's weak. Now the bets are all off, and the prospects look bleak. When you're laid like a piece of old meat on the slab, and they'll cut and they'll slice and they'll poke and they'll jab, and they'll grill you and burn you, and they'll wish you good health with iridium, chemo, and God knows what else. Well, you can't fault the science, though the logic is weak. Is that really an eternal life we should seek? That ship has sailed, that ship has sailed, that ship has already sailed, so to speak. Our mission is more than a struggle for breath, for a few extra rounds in a fight to the death. When our mission is love and compassion and grace, it's not a test of endurance or a marathon race. For love is the saber and love is the shield. Love is the only true power we wield. And eternal love is all you should seek. That ship will be ready to sail, so to speak.
Should I settle for something that's safe from the sun? What would it profit me? What is it worth? If I lose something precious, completely unique, when it's only eternity's love we should seek.
The ship is all ready to sail, so to speak.
So to speak.
That's profound.
That was really neat.
Thank you, Sting. And it's from a show, Sailing Ship or something like that. Thank you. And that was just really right on. It's like, go for the major thing, the love.
You couldn't feel it like a society that we're trying to pump up and keep it alive rather than allow it to go to another place. The metaphor really worked for me.
Which metaphor?
The idea they're trying to keep this society, this organism alive by putting it full of pills and cutting it up, dissecting it and right, chemotherapying it and all right, that stuff, when to let it go and allow it to become what it truly is, which is love, the eternal love, is something that we'd have to really understand before we could even practice it.
Or maybe we could understand it by practicing it. I'm inclined to think that.
Well, you're male. That's probably true.
Speaking of male, one specific thing to take action that people can take right now who are wanting to be a real part of the change that needs to happen, and that is, if you're at war with your body in any way, in other words, you don't like what it looks like, you don't like what it feels like or sounds like even, whatever, that needs to be forgiven. How can you effectively stop the conflict that's going on out there, which is causing so much damage, if inside yourself you are at war with something as intimate as your own body? A lot of people are unhappy with their body and in resistance to it. That resistance is going to lead to some kind of addiction and certainly a withdrawal from a life and vitality that we are all capable of and which we need to have in order to be the carriers of progress into the next century.
We live, as you know, in a clothing optional community, and one of the tenets of living here is that your body is just a body. It's neither good, bad, indifferent, fat, skinny, whatever. It's just a body. When people are naked and they greet each other, there's a 3-second rule. You can only have 3 seconds to even look at the body. You really are encouraged to eye to eye each other, to really see the essence of each other rather than the physical body. Doesn't mean everybody can do that, but that's what this place is all about, and it's really powerful.
So to speak. So come on out. Come and visit us. Come train with us. Come be a part of this transformation. We really do have the tools, and I believe we've got a vision and a way to begin implementing that vision. And that's to start acting, to rehearse our role, start acting like the responsible citizens and vital life beings in the planet in relationship to other vital life beings. And together, we can exercise the real powerful will. Remember where we started? Bad will is short and very quickly dies out. That's why it doesn't go very far. It has to constantly get more. That's where greed comes from, is that bad will. But good will, it's slow and steady. It's the tortoise, not the hare. But you got to trust that process. See, that's what you got to pay. The price of admission here is patience and courage, because it will require both.
So to speak. Paul, I know there's another way to deal with things I don't like, and that's to become one with it.
I thought you were going to say stick your head in the sand, because that's...
No, but that's something I do very well.
But you're good at that. See,
I told my doctor once that I was born under the sign of the ostrich.
What did he say?
She laughed.
Right,
she thought it was funny.
But she did prescribe some medicine, so...
Not that doctor. The doctors I've liked the most have not prescribed medicine. They've really received me, saw me as I was. And the doctors that I haven't really liked are ones who treat me as, oh, this is what you do for this person and this thing, for this symptom. This is what you do for it. Doesn't matter who the person is, so to speak.
So to speak. So we'd like to leave you with this. You can make a big change. Very simple. The bigger the change you can make in yourself, the bigger the change you can affect in your world. And that's how the world changes.
We have to change.
Whoops.
Or did Carlyle say, in vain do we try to change society without changing ourselves?
But he could never change himself, Carlyle.
But you don't know that.
He tried to change his name to Montesquieu.
No, come on, that's not fair to him.
It isn't fair.
He's a wonderful philosopher.
We're not always fair in this program. And this is the time for this program to end. And we've had a fabulous time, so to speak. But what do we have to remember, Rochelle?
We have to remember that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
So to speak.